I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. How much is your family spending on childcare? Is the cost of daycare or preschool squeezing your family's budget? In this hour, we look at how paying for childcare burdens families across the economic spectrum and what is driving costs up. We talked to the co-author of a new study by the Economic Policy Institute, which found that childcare in Maryland, 23 other states, and Washington, D.C. costs more than in-state tuition at a public college. And we'll speak with the executive director of the Maryland Family Network about costs across the state, including Baltimore City, where families spend nearly one-third of their median income on childcare. That's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm so glad you're with us today. From in-home daycare and childcare centers to nannies and babysitters, parents often see their budgets strained by the high cost of childcare. Strained may be too kind a verb. Some family budgets are overwhelmed, torn apart. While the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services recommends that families spend no more than 10% of their income on childcare, a recent study by the nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank, the Economic Policy Institute, found that very few people live in areas where childcare costs are close to that threshold for any except the very wealthy families. The EPI headlined its study, "High-Quality Childcare is Out of Reach for Working Families." It looked at childcare costs in every state, comparing them to state minimum wages and to public college tuition. In this hour, we want to understand what's behind these costs, whether there's anything parents can do to address them, and whether there's any relief on the horizon. And joining us now on the phone from the Economic Policy Institute in Washington is one of the study's authors, Elise Gould. Elise Gould is an economist, senior economist, and the EPI's Director of Health Policy Research. Welcome to Midday, Elise.
Thanks so much for having me.
What prompted this study?
We were updating our family budget calculator that we've been doing for over a decade, which basically measures how much it costs to get by, how much it costs to just have a modest standard of living and be able to afford housing and food and childcare and healthcare and different components. And one of the things we found when we released that in August was that we know that rent is usually a large portion of family budgets. What we found across the country is that exceedingly so, that childcare is now beating out rent.
Childcare for most families is more expensive than rent.
Yes, we're looking at two-parent, two-kid families, specifically kids that are 4 and 8 years old. Obviously, if you have an infant, it can be more expensive. But yes, for these prototypical families, generally speaking, childcare is at least as expensive as rent.
And although that comparison is not one that you underscored so much in the report, you compared the cost of childcare to tuition.
Yes. One of the things that I think is important when we think about paying for children and investing in kids, we think about, okay, well, how does childcare compare to, let's say, in-state college tuition? We all know that college tuition is a burden, and many families save for years to be able to afford to send their kids to college, and not just, you know, middle-income, upper-income families save for years to do that. And what we found is that in 33 states and the District of Columbia, infant care costs exceed the average cost of in-state public college tuition. And in Maryland, infant care costs are 70% higher than in-state public college tuition.
Infant care, so the cost of child care for one infant.
That's right. Full-time care for one infant is higher than public college tuition.
In-state tuition at the University of Maryland. And why, again, did you compare the cost of tuition rather than, say, another expenditure a family might need, like a car?
Well, something like tuition, you're thinking about either child care costs at the young end or child care education at the upper end. You're making an investment in the future. A car expense is a one-time expense, and there's depreciation involved. You're not going to have to pay that year after year. But to pay for a kid, you're going to have to pay child care maybe for 5 years, maybe until they get into public school, and then maybe even then aftercare and babysitting, as you mentioned. So that is a much more similar type of expense. Also, people have a good sense of what it takes to save for college, and it is very expensive and very unaffordable. That has been displayed in literature time and time again, how expensive college is for many people. And the people have the luxury to stay for all those years, but all of a sudden now you're younger in your career and you have an infant, and somehow you have to be able to make that investment, and people simply can't do it.
That is Elise Gould, senior economist with the Economic Policy Institute here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about child care, about the high cost of child care. What are your experiences as a listener? What have you been paying for child care? What are your thoughts about what it's doing to your budget, what might be done about it? You can be part of this conversation by calling 410-662-8780. Or if it's a long-distance call for you, call us on our toll-free line, 866-661-9209. Actually, I think that's 9309. 9309. 866-661-9309. Or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. You pointed out a minute ago, Elise Gould, that people have a sense, families tend to have a sense developed over time as they're raising a child of how much college is going to cost. Do people with newborns, people when they're starting out as parents, not have the sense that child care is going to be as expensive as it is?
No, I don't think people know. I think that's right. I think that they have some idea that they're going to have to go back to work, because increasingly in two-parent households, both parents have to work to make ends meet on that side, you know, putting food on the table, paying for your rent or your housing. And so then they are required to find that child care solution, and many people have to depend on informal care or family caregiving because they simply cannot afford the child care, or often the mother has to make the decision to leave the labor force and give up that income to care for their child.
So if child care were more affordable, do you think more people would move from arrangements that are outside the system, maybe relying on relatives or neighbors who don't have training for child care? And would more people take advantage of licensed child care?
Absolutely. If there was high-quality, affordable child care available to parents, I believe that they would absolutely take it up. I think that we're seeing now, as some cities are introducing more of a universal pre-K. That's one component of child care, obviously limited age, and you do see lots of people very interested in providing that experience for their kids and providing that experience for themselves as parents, as working parents.
Give us a portrait of the cost of child care in Maryland.
So in Maryland, if we look at just simply infant care costs are about $14,000 a year for full-time care.
And that's an average across the state? Does it vary a lot in the state?
It would vary in the state. The data does not break it down within the state, but obviously, as many things are, nearer to the cities, it's going to be more expensive. In the more rural areas, it's going to be a little bit less expensive, but that is on average.
So $14,000, and do you know how that compares to median income in Maryland or the income of a minimum wage worker?
Yes. So if you were to try to pay for infant child care on a minimum wage worker salary, let's say you're working full time, your earnings, your full time earnings from January through October in Maryland would have to be devoted to child care. So you haven't paid for housing, you haven't put food on the table. That much, 83% of your annual earnings would have to go to infant care. It is just out of reach. And if you were to look at median family income, that's about $90,000, median family income in the state of Maryland. So even then, thinking about paying that $14,000 for infant care costs, or even more for costs for, you know, additional children, that is also out of reach for many of those middle-income families.
So $14,000 is what you found the cost for infant care. You also, as I recall, looked at families with more than one child, what the cost would be if you have more than one child in child care.
Yes. The cost is increasingly significant for families with more than one kid. So if you have, let's say, an infant and a four-year-old, those costs could be up to $24,000 a year, or over a quarter of families' median income. So over 25% of families' median income would have to be devoted just to child care.
Which leads, of course, to why are child care costs so high?
And that's a great question. I mean, one of the reasons that childcare costs are so high is that you want to make sure that you have enough staff for each kid. And so childcare costs vary across the country based on state-level accreditation regulations, so that you have higher costs, let's say, in the state of New York than you do in Alabama, because the required teacher-to-child ratio is different. And so you have substantially more teachers per kid, or fewer kids per teacher in some areas versus others. So that is the number one driver, I think, of child care costs, is the cost of staffing. But I don't want to be mistaken to think that I think child care is too expensive, because it is expensive to provide high-quality child care to kids to try to close achievement gaps, to make sure we're investing in early childhood education. That is expensive. We just need to figure out ways to make it affordable.
And so you're pretty confident that most of the cost is embedded in what is paid to teachers,
that
there's not much waste in childcare.
Yes, that's certainly a large share of that cost. But obviously, there's also building, maintenance, all of the other the administrative costs, all of the other staffing that has to go along with it as well.
I'd like to pull Samantha, who's calling us from Baltimore. Samantha, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
So I am currently pregnant, expecting my first child. My husband and I are both educators. We live in the city, and I just started the research into childcare, and I was astounded by how absolutely, basically impossible it is to find infant care in my area that is affordable. So the one that also is quality, that has good reviews, that I would feel comfortable sending my unborn daughter to one day. The one place that's anywhere near me, I mean, within a 10 to 15 mile radius.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Within a what mile radius?
Oh, a 10 to 15 mile radius.
10 to 15, okay.
And that's in the opposite direction of my work. Costs $18,000 a year, and that's not even for the summer, because I'm a teacher. I have the luxury of being off in the summer. But I literally, at this point, we don't know what we're going to do. We don't have family in the area, and it's just like, you're supposed to be excited. You're expecting your first child, and this has been a huge stress on us, just trying to think of, like, what do we do? I don't know what to do. And, we're still early in the process and trying to do more research, but I really don't. I'm reaching out to families now, like, what are our other options besides daycare? I mean, we're trying to maybe look into nannies and stuff like that, but it's very, very stressful.
How much time do you have to make this call?
Not due until early April,
okay.
And I will have the rest of the school year off and then the summer off. So fortunately for us, we won't have to send a child to daycare until next September. So that's a huge, time. I don't know that most people have the luxury of that time. But also, for infant care, especially because of the teacher-to-student ratio, I guess, has to be lower, based on Maryland standards. A lot of daycares don't offer infant care at all. They offer two and up or three and up. So a lot of daycares don't even have infant care. And the ones that do, some of the reviews are quite unfavorable. And it's, do I want to risk that? I mean, we're talking about even potentially, does someone need to stay home? I mean, those are the kind of realistic conversations we're trying to have right now.
Can I ask, you're free to say no, but you laid out what the cost at this point, what the cost would seem to be for childcare. How does that compare to what you earn?
So we actually, we're probably above average. We work in Baltimore City and Baltimore County as educators. So we make pretty good money, but we're looking at the cost of childcare. So I would make more than the cost of childcare per year, but is it quality childcare? Is that where I want to send my daughter? I mean, would I rather take the pay cut and stay home and, try to take some kind of side job or maybe become a nanny myself and then watch another child with my daughter? I mean, I don't know. We're exploring those options, but to have to even think about that, I don't want to not work. Like, I get, a lot of pleasure and enjoyment from my job and helping students and kids, but at this point, it's we just don't know.
And I really appreciate your call, Samantha. You've really teed up quite a few issues for us that we're going to be discussing over the course of this hour. And I'm glad to hear from you. Elise Gould, what goes through your mind when you hear Samantha weighing all these facts?
I am very sympathetic to the problems that Samantha's talking about. I can understand and I can hear your brain churning to think about what are those options? You know, is there a nanny share that I can get into, or is there, you know, some sort of a care situation you can absolutely, you know, afford. And the problem is that this is widespread. Women are increasingly our most skilled and educated workers. And it's really imperative that we make it easier for them to both keep their job and care for their families in the way that they feel comfortable with.
One thing we haven't talked about is sort of the other part of the equation. I mean, the reason, part of the reason that childcare expenses are such a big proportion of median family wages is that wages have been stagnant so long.
Yes.
How long has it been since that families basically haven't had a raise in the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about wages for workers, and they've been pretty much flat for the last decade. And in fact, in the last 30 years, the last generation, earnings have really not risen very much for workers at all. And we think about families, we think about households. One of the main reasons why their earnings or their income has gone up at all is because they're working more hours. And so, you know, both parents are working more. That makes the need for childcare even more. And yet the wages are simply not keeping up enough to be able to afford it.
Before we're going to take a break here in a minute, Elise, before I let you go, just summarize for us what the big takeaway is from your study.
Well, I think in using different sets of comparisons, the minimum wage worker, the median income, public college tuition, it is very clear that childcare is not affordable for many families across this country, across various income levels. It is simply not affordable, and I think we need to think about solutions that are at the scale of the problem.
And what solution occurs to you?
Well, I think we consider looking at places that have done some experiments with universal pre-K, affordable, high-quality pre-K, extend that on down the ages and make sure that that access is universal and can be provided for everyone. I think there are some experiments across the states that we can look at.
I really appreciate your walking us through this, Elise. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Elise Gould is a senior economist with the Economic Policy Institute. She's director of EPI's health policy research, and she co-wrote a report called High Quality Childcare is Out of Reach for Working Families. We're going to take this short break. When we come back, a closer look at the cost of childcare in Maryland. What are you spending? Is childcare your family's biggest expense? Have you had to cut back in other areas to afford to keep your kids in daycare? Give us a call now, 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We'll be back in a bit. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this hour about childcare. What are you paying for childcare? Is it putting a strain on your family's budget? If so, you're not alone. Childcare for Maryland families ranges from an estimated annual cost for a family of four with two young children of about $9,600 a year in Garrett County to $25,000 a year in Montgomery County. Childcare costs eat up the largest percentage of income, 29%. In the city of Baltimore, in almost half of Maryland cities and counties, 20% or more of median income is spent on childcare. We'd like to hear your thoughts about the cost of childcare and whether you can even find childcare for the hours you need. Call us at 410-662-8780. If that's long distance for you, call our toll-free number, 866-661-9309, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. The data I just cited come to us from the Maryland Family Network, a nonprofit advocacy organization that connects families to childcare through its network of childcare providers. The Maryland Family Network also provides training for childcare professionals and operates centers across the state that offer services to parents of young children. Margaret Williams is executive director of the Maryland Family Network. She's with me in the studio. Let me just make a note. The Maryland Family Network is an underwriter of WIPR. The Maryland Family Network also produces a show on WIPR called The First 5 Years, which you can hear on Wednesday afternoons. It's made possible by a contribution from the M&T Charitable Foundation. Margaret Williams, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And right off the bat, in case Samantha, who talked to us a few minutes ago, is still listening, you said you wanted to make sure that Samantha has the toll-free number for
right.
the Maryland Family Network.
Yes. We operate the state's free line to call in and also an online.
Line to call in?
To call in to get child care, to find what your child care options are, where they are.
It sounds like Samantha, if she hasn't already called you, should.
Yes, just to make sure she hasn't left any stone unturned.
And what is that number?
It's 1-877-261-0060.
1-877-261-0060.
That's it.
And we will give that that number again later, and we'll put it on our website.
Cool.
Tell me what else the Maryland Family Network makes available. I mean, what are your major services?
Well, one,
in this area,
in this regard, it is to ensure the quality of child care throughout Maryland. We operate a network of child care resource centers. There are 12 of them throughout the state. They cover all 24 jurisdictions.
And so what happens at a resource center?
They provide training and technical assistance to the child care community in everything from how to start up a program to health and safety issues to child development and interacting appropriately with both children and their parents, depending on the age.
So you've got a dozen resource centers.
Dozen resource centers. We also are concerned about parenting, especially parenting for people with lots of barriers to success. So adolescent parents, parents who've dropped out of school, parents with special needs. So throughout the state, we operate a network of family support centers. Some of these are funded with early Head Start dollars. They're for two-generation programs, parents and children together. So they are focusing both on parents' skills as operators of households and their skills as parents of very young children, and also on the development of the children, birth to three. And finally, we do lots of public policy advocacy. So we're active in both Annapolis and in Washington, making sure that there are policies and programs that benefit families of very young children so that the next generation gets a strong start.
And perhaps it's part of that effort that you publish data on trends and demographics in childcare. Give us a picture of what is offered in Maryland in terms of childcare. What's most popular?
There's by far the largest option for people looking for childcare, especially if people are looking for 7 to 12 hours of childcare a day, is center-based care. So these are, they range in size from 10 or more children mm-hmm. in a single setting. And the next most popular is family child care, especially for younger children. People like their infants and toddlers in a homey setting. So we have...
And a family-based child care is what size?
Can be up to 10.
Oh.
Yeah, or 8 or 10. With this regulation for large family child care providers changed recently. But you can't have any more than 2 children under the age of 2 with a single adult in a family child care home. So it is an intimate setting. And the provider has to be able to see all the children in her care or his care at the same time. So, it's small.
It's small. Okay. but more children are in centers than in family.
Almost 2 to 1 centers to family homes in Maryland. Yeah.
I want to play a clip now. Our senior producer, Maureen Harvey, went out and talked to parents about in Baltimore City and Baltimore County about how they address their child care needs. And here's what we heard.
My 2 older kids, they go to school, and after school they come home on the bus, and my parents usually are in and out of the house in the afternoons until I get home. And then my youngest is 18 months, and he has daycare with me 3 days a week, and daycare with his father 2 days a week.
I have one child. He's in daycare in Pasadena, and he goes full-time Monday through Friday.
Right now, Jack is going to daycare that we pay for, and it's kind of a pre-K program.
I decided to stay at home, so I got a job to be a teacher at school, but then I decided that it's not worth of this because I have two children, and they are both under age of 3.
We have a babysitter who comes every day, roughly somewhere between 35 to 50 hours a week, depending upon our work schedules.
My son is in a 3-year-old classroom in a local learning center.
We utilize the aftercare program at our son's elementary school.
Well, quite a range.
Yes. A lot of options.
It does sound like a lot of options. I think if I just heard that, I would think it's childcare is very available. Putting aside for a minute the big question of what it costs, is there enough childcare offered in Maryland?
I think the way I'd respond to that is that there is not enough quality childcare for many, many years. I mean, childcare evolved in this country and in many others as a way to help parents go to work. So it was babysitting while parents worked. Mm-hmm. In the last two decades, we have become much more aware of the fact that these early years are very important times for brain development, and childcare is no longer just a place to put children while their parents work. It is children learning while parents are earning, we like to say. And it is very, very important what happens to children during these early years, so that just any kind of care isn't necessarily good enough for the optimum development of children. So I would say there, people find what they can afford and do what they think is best for themselves and their children. It may not be what's best in the long run for this next generation coming up.
Well, and of course, another piece of that picture is the hours that a parent may need. I mean, I hear what you say about child development, mm-hmm. about making sure that a child gets the stimulation that is going to mm-hmm. make that brain, give that brain a chance to develop in the best possible way. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of, you know, sort of 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If I'm thinking midnight, because the parents got the night shift,
yes.
I'm at that point a little less focused on how stimulating the childcare is. That may not be the right response. I'm just telling you how I react to it.
Yes. There is in Maryland, we do have licensed providers of care for weekends and odd hours, evenings, and, you know, shifting hours. So quality care is available for that group of people who need that kind of care. It is not inexpensive. And it isn't, you know, there isn't a lot of it available, but it is, especially in places like distribution warehouse areas, that is available for people. But not everybody uses that care. It is not unusual, though, for working families to need more than 8 hours of care for their children a day. So that's kind of the basic. I mean, child care centers are operating 7 to 10 hours a day minimum.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We have lots of people who want to be part of this conversation. Let's talk to Catherine in Frederick. Catherine, welcome to Midday.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make the point that there's a lot of inherent sexism in when you're talking about childcare, a lot of assumption that it's going to be the woman who's having to make that difficult choice about staying at home or not. I actually know probably 50-50 of the people I know. It's actually the woman who is going to be going to work, and the husband is going to stay at home. Because, as you pointed out, the women have better qualifications. You know, they are going places in their careers, and they'll bring home more money, and that's the point, than their husbands will at that stage. So their husbands take on the childcare, and they fit in part-time work, often kind of, you know, small business work around childcare.
Interesting point, Catherine. Let me get Margaret Williams' reaction to that.
Yeah, I think we don't We don't have hard data on that for Maryland, but it is absolutely true anecdotally from the calls we're getting on our locate line, the number you gave out early at the in this session.
877-261-0060.
Right. We are getting more and more calls from fathers, or at least, significant males in the household, about finding care for their children. So I think there are a lot of fathers taking the lead in caregiving in their homes and in their communities.
Mary from Howard County is calling us. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I wanted to call in because we are about to have a second one, and we had so much trouble finding daycare for our first. We did use the Family Maryland Family Network. I called over 30 places, and they either would not call me back or were full because they can only take two infants. And we finally got into a center. It cost us $400 a week for our 20-month-old. And while he will go down in price about $100 a week, when he turns two, when we add the infant next summer, it will be $700 a week. I said that wrong before. $400 a week now. It will be almost $700 a week. While we love the center, it's a struggle. And we can't afford either one of us to quit our job to stay home, but it's almost that we can't afford the daycare. And it was really hard to get them in. And when we found out about this, the new one, we told the school almost immediately, and we're actually already second on the waiting list. So the availability of infant care, especially in this area, seems so small to the amount needed.
I appreciate your sharing this with us. Margaret, nodding your head as you hear about this.
That is absolutely the case. We have documented a steady downturn in the number of infant toddler slots all across in every single jurisdiction in Maryland. There are a variety of reasons for that. And certainly one of them is the cost of infant care, because the ratio is 1 to 3, one adult for 3 infants. That's expensive. It's also true that this is, I hope, doesn't get too weedy for the audience, but most child care providers are seeing a range of ages from birth to 4 or 5. The older children require fewer adults per child. So they, in a way, cross-subsidize the younger children. Because Maryland, very thankfully, is moving towards universal pre-K, many 4-year-olds are now in public pre-K settings. They have left their child care.
About how many Maryland 4-year-olds, or what proportion?
Probably a little over half of 4-year-olds who are eligible. The state requires school districts to serve children with half or full day pre-K at 188% of poverty, with an allowance up to 300% at the option of the local jurisdiction, the local school district. So of the eligibles, a little over half are going to public pre-K, which is 2.5 or 6.5 hour days. So those children are leaving their child care settings, and the child care settings can't afford to offer just infant toddler care. It's so expensive, and parents can't pay it. So we are seeing decrease.
I'm sorry, I stepped on what you were saying. Are you saying that therefore existing child care centers are raising their rates because they no longer sort of get the inherent subsidy from the older children? Or are you saying they're shutting down?
They're shutting down. Well, let's just say they might try to raise the rates, but no one's going to pay it. No one's going to come. They know their populations. Child care providers are very much a part of their communities, and they can't get the money they need in order to support. I mean, it is $18,000 to $20,000. I'm looking here at Frederick. It's our caller is from Frederick now, and it is one of the highest costs of childcare in the state. So it's $21,000 a year for quality infant care.
We are going to take another short break here. We've got some callers with us, and I'm asking them to hang on. And if you would also like to be part of this conversation, please call us, 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Margaret Williams from the Maryland Family Network and with you to talk more about child care. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Sheila Cast. You are listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR. We're talking about the high cost of childcare in our region with Margaret Williams. She's executive director of the Maryland Family Network, a nonprofit organization that advocates for children, families, and childcare providers. And you can join this conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Margaret, you were talking about the interplay between pre-K offered by the school systems mm-hmm. and childcare offered by private businesses, private people. Right. And, of course, it sort of raises the question, why do we expect families to carry the cost of childcare if we don't expect families to carry the cost of elementary education unless they choose a private school? But we make public education available starting now even earlier. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, are we at a stage where we are thinking anew about what society needs to do for children as their brains are developing?
Absolutely. Yep. I think this is we are at a very important historical moment of change where we have, I think, a large number of people all across the country, all walks of life, are beginning to realize how important the early years are. This is a time of tremendous growth in the brain, and that the feeding and cuddling of children is only the beginning, that the interaction, the attachment between adults and children, and the ongoing play, the serve and volley of language, for instance, is what actually grows the brain. So in these early years, we are developing the social, emotional foundations for the cognitive work that goes on later in life. 80% of the brain is developed in the first several years of life. So we now that we have seen this on electron scans, and we know there's also been the other side of this. We have neuroscience on one side. On the other side, we have economics. And we have somebody like James Heckman, the Nobel laureate in economics, who has looked at what are public investments, where's our best investment. By far, the best return on the dollar is early care and education. For every dollar invested in early care and education, you can save seven public dollars. So,
those are seven public dollars that we now spend on
incarceration, special education, child abuse and neglect, teen pregnancy, health problems. So there's a real direct correlation between healthy infants, toddlers, and young ones, and the health of the adult population, for instance. So there is a growing awareness of the importance of investing early. We don't have a history of it. We are at a time in our country when our economy is not booming the way it did a decade. So we have to find the sources of funding to pay for without, I would say, chasing out the private money that's already in the early childhood sector.
Let's talk to Larry, who's in Northeast Baltimore County. He operates a licensed daycare program. Larry, welcome to Midday.
Thanks. I've been listening with bated breath as you've talked about all of these things and familiar with Maryland Family Network, but I'd like to add a few things to the thoughts that have been expressed.
Please.
One of the things that I would say is that it is voluminously expensive should the public sector try to pay for child care, particularly from infant through. It's a tremendous expense, and if everything follows the way it typically does, if it were to become a public responsibility, it would be less efficient than having the private sector, which I'm a part of, handle the same responsibilities. And one of the things that you'll see is statistically, the centers, the private centers that exist now, produce the most kindergarten-ready children of any other type, including public types, when they enter kindergarten at age 5. So we're doing a great job now, and I would agree with the statement, you don't want to push out the private sector.
And I don't think that Margaret Williams was saying that we should. Margaret?
Right. Definitely not. In fact, one of the great things about Maryland is, as we've started to figure out how to help families afford quality care, and we've started with the 4-year-olds in public pre-K, we've been very careful to create what we call in the business the diverse delivery system. Though it's public money, it can be spent in an elementary school or in a private setting in the community, which many parents prefer the latter because, as we talked earlier, the private sector offers full day, full week, full year. Parents don't get 2 or 3 months off in the summer the way schools close, right? So child care for working families really needs to be a full year. And so we can spend public dollars in private settings that meet the same qualities of the quality of teaching professional staff, curriculum, and so forth that is required in the public school. So we are huge proponents of the diverse delivery system. And we do agree that the high quality child care in the community, you know, has great results.
Larry, I appreciate your call. I want us to hear from some more of the families that Maureen Harvey, our producer, spoke with. She asked people how child care is affecting their budgets.
Our child care is probably our second largest component of our budget, secondary to rent. We are still able to save some money with our joint income, but it's not as much as we would like to. And I think that we do sacrifice the amount that we save per month based on our child care costs.
For instance, driving a car that needed a lot of repairs long enough until our son went to elementary school at the local public school, and at that point being able to invest more in more reliable transportation.
Yeah, we just make decisions accordingly. For instance, we're not going to get a new car until he's in public school because we can't afford a payment right now.
And Maureen also asks some of these parents about exactly what we've been talking about with Larry and with Margaret Williams about the public versus private role in paying for it. You know, it's an issue in the presidential race. Hillary Clinton has said she'd double federal funding for Head Start. Bernie Sanders has said he would implement universal pre-K. We got a range of responses when we asked people in the Baltimore area about whether the government should provide more assistance for child care.
I've never thought that the government should help me for child care now.
Well, even if you look at, you know, the quote-unquote affordable options, they're still out of the reach of most people, I think. I mean, if you're looking at options that are, say, you know, $8,000 a year for a nursery school, that's beyond most people's capability.
I definitely think high-quality child care should be a priority of government and funds for people in all economic situations. With two parents working and finding it hard to afford the highest quality child care for young children, that's a problem.
What I think is probably the most important thing for our country to do is to expand the services, but then to also make those people aware of the services that are available to them so that they make use of them in a more efficient fashion.
Larry, are you still with us?
Still there.
Okay, quickly, what's your response? Which of those categories, if any, match what you would say about government involvement in paying for this?
Well, what I'd say is government involvement certainly would be less efficient because it's more difficult to manage on a classroom-by-classroom basis when you have a large organization. But basically, and of course, the wages would go up significantly for those providing child care if the government took over. But the cost goes up in direct proportion to what you pay your workers. For example, the infant care. if I'm paying someone, let's say, $10 an hour to provide infant care,
which is what the Bureau of Labor Statistics says that the average child care worker makes, $10 an hour.
Ours make a little bit more than that. Our teacher's aides, which would be the not in charge but assisting, makes a little bit less than that. But if you take that and simply add the other payroll tax costs to the organization, multiply it 11 hours a day, which is the average that we find for the infants up through the toddler age, then you find out that you're actually losing money because of the 1-to-3 ratio, which I think is a good ratio. I don't think you can do a great job if you had 4 infants to care with 1 qualified worker. But that determines what the cost of child care is, and it's already basically at break-even or loss basis as it is, and tremendously expensive.
Got it. I appreciate your walking through. Margaret, is there something you wanted to add?
Yes. I just want to point out that this high cost of child care is not contributing to a wealthy class of people who are working in child care. Larry said, our child care workers are on a par with parking lot attendants and workers in dry cleaning establishments. The average of a lead teacher in a child care center in Maryland is $26,000 a year. An elementary school, the average elementary school teacher in Maryland Public Schools is making $64,000 a year, is only working 10 months, and has retirement and health care benefits. So this huge disparity in the pay in this workforce
right.
is significant.
We have just a couple minutes left, and I want to let Richard in Baltimore raise a topic that we should cover before we wrap up. Richard, quickly, your point.
Okay. Yes, very quickly. Is Maryland Family Network going to be advocating and getting out into the public the fumbled handoff between switching the purchase of care voucher program from DHR to the Department of Education? Families are starting to suffer. This just happened a couple months ago, and families are already suffering because of this fumbled handoff.
So we have, thank you, Richard. We have not talked about vouchers. Can you, in a minute, tell us what we should know about vouchers and how they've changed?
This is a technical problem because there has been a shift in the vendors, so to speak, of how the state is managing its subsidy program. And we are very concerned about it. We've heard a lot from consumers and the industry itself, and we're working very closely with the Maryland State Department of Education to get this straightened out.
And what kind of vouchers are available? I mean, what
these are for low-income families who are working or in the temporary cash assistance program. They are entitled to a subsidy for their child care, and the state administers that program. So families.
What part of the state?
The Maryland State Department of Education manages the voucher program.
Oh, we have to leave it there. Margaret Williams, I'm really grateful to you.
Thank you.
Margaret Williams is Executive Director of the Maryland Family Network, and their toll-free number, if you've got more questions about child care and finding it, 877-261-0060. Earlier, we spoke with Elise Gould, Senior Economist with the Economic Policy Institute, about the report she co-wrote, High-Quality Child Care is Out of Reach for Working Families. And thank you to our listeners, and thank you to Ethel's Creole Kitchen for providing lunch for our midday guests. It's located in Mount Washington Village at 1615 Sulgrave Avenue. It features a lunch and dinner menu that has gumbo, jambalaya, salads, sandwiches in New Orleans style. More information at www.ethelscreolekitchen.com. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm so glad you've been with us today. Come back tomorrow, and now stay tuned for Here and Now.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Melody Simmons and Connor Graham. The Midday intern is Adam Droneberg. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.